Picture this. You are seeing your 20th patient of the day as a family practice physician. Artie is a 57-year-old man who is here because his wife is concerned about his skin. He reports recurrent large blisters on his chest. His wife confides, "I told him not to, but he pops the blisters as soon as they appear. He thinks it helps them heal faster." You know that the appearance of blisters is a clue to the underlying problem, and you ask your usual investigatory questions about skin lesions. He reports that they don't itch or really hurt, but they are bothersome because they pop and ooze all over his clothes. They're mostly on his trunk, but he's had a few spots in his mouth as well and wonders if they are related. A light bulb goes off in your brain as you recall this pattern of torso plus mucosal mouth blisters. And you ponder how to tell Artie and his wife that you suspect a potentially fatal condition if not treated rapidly. Welcome to Audio Bricks. I'm Laurel Toft, bringing bullous skin disorders from our bricks to your ears. After completing this section, you will be able to 1. Describe the typical clinical presentation, risk factors, pathophysiology, diagnostic features, and treatment of pemphigoid vulgaris. 2. Describe the typical clinical presentation, risk factors, pathophysiology, diagnostic features, and treatment of bullous pemphigoid. 3. Describe the typical clinical presentation, risk factors, pathophysiology, diagnostic features, and treatment of dermatitis herpetiformis. Part 1. What is a bulla? If you've ever worn a pair of new shoes that were just a little too tight and woke up the next morning with a blister on your heel, then you've had a bulla. Bullae are fluid-filled blisters over 1 centimeter in diameter. They can be caused by infection, mechanical stress, or a malfunctioning immune system. In this discussion, we tackle the most common autoimmune bullous or blistering disorders: pemphigus vulgaris, bullous pemphigoid, and dermatitis herpetiformis. Distinctly, the blisters in each of these disorders involve different layers of the skin and autoantibodies against different proteins. Part 2. Pemphigus vulgaris. Pemphigus vulgaris, or PV, is an autoimmune skin disorder that causes intraepithelial blisters in skin and mucous membranes. It is a rare and potentially fatal condition, with an incidence of 0.5 to 3.2 cases per 100,000 worldwide, mostly affecting people aged 50 to 60 years, with men and women affected equally. PV affects both the skin and mucous membranes. Mucosal blisters rupture easily, so patients present with painful and erythematous eroded lesions. Inside the mouth, a ruptured blister on the mucosal surface of the cheek looks like raised areas of tissue surrounding a central opening, like an erupted and now deflated volcano. Patients can also have skin involvement characterized by flaccid or limp blisters with an erythematous base. When these blisters rupture, they can cause painful bleeding lesions that look like open pink or purple polka dots. Patients with PV will also have a positive Nikolsky sign, which is when the affected epidermis separates from the underlying dermis with just a light touch. The lesions of PV are usually non-pruritic, meaning not itchy, as opposed to the other bullous disorders we will discuss later. In patients with pemphigus vulgaris, the oral cavity is the most common site of involvement. The first presentation is often within the oral cavity and then progresses to involve other sites, including the conjunctiva, the nose, esophagus, vagina, and anus. When the disease progresses beyond mucosa to the skin, then the scalp, face, neck, axilla, groin, and trunk are typically involved. You can remember this pattern of skin involvement as head to groin, minus the arms themselves. In terms of the etiology of PV, genetics are thought to play a role. Patients who are of Ashkenazi Jew, Indian, European, or Middle Eastern descent are at increased risk of developing PV. Similarly, patients with human leukocyte antigen, or HLA, DR4, and HLA DR14 are at increased risk. Pemphigus vulgaris develops when the body's immune system makes a mistake and attacks cells of the mucous membranes in the skin, specifically the proteins in upper layers of the skin. Immunoglobulin G, or IgG, autoantibodies form against the proteins desmoglein 1 and 3, which are part of a desmosome responsible for adhesion between keratinocytes and the epidermis. Mucocutaneous PV is associated with positive antibodies against desmoglein 1 and 3. Mucosal dominant PV is associated with positive antibodies against desmoglein 3 only. Destruction of desmoglein results in acantholysis, or separation of keratinocytes, in the stratum spinosum layer of the epidermis. The stratum spinosum is a layer just above the stratum basale, which separates the epidermis from the dermis. These blisters are thin-walled, since the separation is happening in the epidermis, and flaccid, so they rupture easily, giving that positive Nikolsky sign found on clinical examination. Although rare, PV can also be associated with UV radiation and drugs, especially thiol drugs, for example, penicillamine and captopril. In order to diagnose pemphigus vulgaris, we use a combination of history and physical exam with confirmatory laboratory diagnosis. PV is suggested by a history of skin involvement with multiple flaccid blisters and mucosal membrane involvement with multiple non-healing ulcers in the mouth. The diagnosis is supported by a positive Nikolsky sign on examination of the blisters. Remember that this means the blisters rupture with just the slightest touch. Confirmatory laboratory diagnosis is twofold, serology and biopsy. Serological testing in the blood uses enzyme-linked immunosorbent assay, or ELISA, and indirect immunofluorescent, IFF, testing to look for the IgG and autoantibodies. Biopsy testing of the lesion and the perilesion unaffected tissue is the gold standard for diagnosis. Here, we use histological examination using light microscopy of the lesional skin looking for acantholysis and direct immunofluorescence of the perilesional skin looking for intercellular IgG deposits in a net-like pattern. Okay, time for a knowledge check-in. In pemphigus vulgaris, autoantibodies attack desmogleins in which epidermal layer? Answer is, in PV, autoantibodies against desmoglein 1 and 3 are in the stratum spinosum layer of the epidermis. Pemphigus vulgaris is a brutal disease and should be treated aggressively. The aim is to induce remission as quickly as possible through medical management and not to lose sight of the importance of local skin care. Systemic steroid therapy, with or without adjuvant immunosuppressants, is the first-line treatment for PV. Immunosuppressant therapy such as azathioprine or mycophenolate mofetil is used as an adjunct to reduce dependency on steroids. The primary target of management is to prevent the development of new lesions and to do so ASAP. The treatment should continue until about 80% of existing lesions have healed, at which time tapering of medication can be started safely. If the disease is refractory, rituximab or intravenous immunoglobulin, IVIG, may be used. In addition to medical therapy, local skin care is crucial. The goal here is to prevent any infection of the denuded skin or blisters and to reduce patient discomfort, mostly using topical steroids. Large blisters may be punctured and drained. Antiseptic solution, with or without antibacterial ointment, may be used to keep the lesions clean. So what can we expect long-term for patients with PV? Pemphigus vulgaris is a very serious and potentially fatal disease. Without treatment, the one-year mortality rate is 75%. Let me say that again. 75% fatality from a skin disease! The most common causes of death are infections and metabolic disturbances. There's good news, though. With proper treatment, mortality drops to 10%. Mild disease may resolve spontaneously, but the disease is prone to recur. Part 3. Bullous pemphigoid. Next, let's look at a disease where blistering occurs deeper in the skin tissue at the subepithelial layer. Bullous pemphigoid, BP, is an autoimmune skin disorder that causes these subepithelial blisters in mucous membranes and skin due to antibodies attacking hemidesmosomal proteins. The incidence of this disorder is about 4.3 cases per 100,000 in Europe, affecting people older than 60 years, equally men and women. Bullous pemphigoid has a prodromal phase ranging from weeks to months in duration. The prodromal phase presents with urticaria or hive-like lesions, which are erythematous, pruritic, and edematous wheals. That means they are itchy, red, swollen, fluid-filled blisters. The bullae seen on the skin in bullous pemphigoid are severely pruritic, 1 to 3 centimeter blisters on an erythematous base. That's roughly the size of the bubbles in bubble wrap. These bullae are tense and therefore negative for the Nikolsky sign. When they do rupture, the eroded blisters are similar in presentation to pemphigus vulgaris, with a moist erythematous base and crust formation. The clinical presentation that stands out for BP is its prodromal phase with itchy urticarial lesions that progress to tense blisters. The lesions of BP can occur anywhere on the skin. However, they're often seen in the lower abdomen, groin, and flexors of extremities. In some patients, oral lesions can be found, but this is much less frequent than in pemphigus vulgaris. Time for a quick knowledge check. What symptoms are seen in the prodromal phase of bullous pemphigoid? Bullous pemphigoid is associated with the prodromal phase of urticarial lesions, and its time course ranges from weeks to months. So, how does someone get BP? Genetics are likely involved since patients of European descent older than 60 years are at increased risk of BP. There's also evidence that HLA-DQB1 is associated with bullous pemphigoid. Bullous pemphigoid occurs due to environmental factors and antigen cross-reactivity. Certain infections and drugs can lead to BP when the body forms antibodies against infectious antigens or drugs. These antibodies then cross-react with self-antigens in the basement membrane zone of the skin, causing an autoimmune attack. Infections from hepatitis B, hepatitis C, Helicobacter pylori, Toxoplasma gondii, and cytomegalovirus can all lead to development of BP. Dipeptidyl peptidase 4, DPP4 inhibitors, including linagliptin and vildagliptin, used in the treatment of diabetes, can also cause drug-induced bullous pemphigoid. The pathogenesis of BP is mediated by autoantibodies against the hemidesmosomes, which attach keratinocytes to the cells of the epithelial basement membrane. This event initiates a cascade of inflammatory damage that disrupts the connection between the basal layer, or stratum basalis, of the epidermis and the underlying basement membrane. This explains why the blisters of BP are more tense than those of pemphigus vulgaris. Because this damage is deeper within the epidermis, completely beneath the stratum spinosum, the skin layer above the blister is thicker and thus less likely to rupture. The most common hemidesmosomal proteins targeted in this disease are bullous pemphigoid antigen 180, BP180, and BP230. BP180 is the main transmembrane protein that adheres basal keratinocytes in the stratum basalis layer of the epidermis to the basement membrane. And BP230 is an intracellular protein that links the intermediate filaments to hemidesmosomes. Just like most autoimmune skin diseases, bullous pemphigoid diagnosis is by clinical history, physical examination, and confirmed with laboratory investigations. BP is suggested by a history of tense skin bullae associated with pruritus and mucosal sparing in a relatively older patient. Again, these bullae are negative for the Nikolsky sign on physical exam. Diagnostic workup tests blood samples with ELISA or indirect immunofluorescence for circulating antibodies. Biopsy samples of the blisters and the skin around them are tested using light microscopy, looking for subepidermal blisters with inflammatory infiltrates, and direct immunofluorescence looking for intercellular IgG along the basement membrane, this time in a linear pattern. Bullous pemphigoid is far less serious than PV. Therefore, bullous pemphigoid treatment is less aggressive. First, it's important to control the cause, for example, medication or an infection. Topical steroids are the cornerstone of BP treatment and are usually sufficient on their own. Oral steroids may be used if topical application is not available. Tetracycline antibiotics are steroid-sparing drugs that also can be used in the treatment. And in refractory disease, immunosuppressant therapy with azathioprine, mycophenolate mofetil, or IVIG may be used. Good local skin care helps reduce pain and prevent infections. Lesions should be cleaned with antiseptic solution. Open erosions should be covered with a dressing. Puncturing blisters is controversial as it provides comfort to the patient but increases the risk of infection. Bullous pemphigoid is a chronic but self-limiting disease. Patients go into multiple cycles of relapse and remission. Because of the nature and duration of the disease, BP may have a significant impact on a patient's quality of life. the one-year mortality for BP ranges from 6 to 40%, and BP secondary to medication has a better prognosis than other causes. Part 4. Dermatitis herpetiformis. Dermatitis herpetiformis, DH, is an autoimmune skin disorder that causes blisters due to gluten sensitivity. Most of the time, DH is associated with celiac disease. The prevalence of DH is about 11 cases per 100,000 people in the United States. It affects people aged 30 to 50 years, slightly more men than women. Because of the high incidence of DH in conjunction with celiac disease, it's important to know a little bit about CD. Celiac disease is an autoimmune disease caused by gluten sensitivity. When gluten is ingested, the immune reaction in the small intestine results in villous atrophy and hypertrophy of intestinal crypts. Untreated celiac disease often leads to gastrointestinal symptoms such as diarrhea, failure to thrive, iron deficiency anemia, and increased risk of malignancy. The pathogenesis of celiac disease involves development of IgA antibodies against tissue transglutaminase. Okay, so back to dermatitis herpetiformis. Patients with DH present with clusters of severely pruritic papules and vesicles on the skin. Remember that vesicles are just smaller versions of bullae. Since the tiny groups of vesicles tend to look similar to herpes, they're given the name herpetiformis. The lesions usually are distributed symmetrically in groups over extensor surfaces such as shoulders, elbows, knees, and buttocks. They are fleshy or erythematous in color. Because of its intense pruritus, patients often scratch the lesions, causing erosions and excoriations that are part of the common presentation. Although oral involvement is rare, when it does occur, it is characterized by erythematous vesicles or erosions. Because of the association with celiac, patients may also present with GI symptoms due to gluten sensitivity, including cramping pain, diarrhea, and constipation. In contrast to pemphigus vulgaris and bullous pemphigoid, dermatitis herpetiformis usually presents with grouped papules and vesicles that give patients a burning and stinging sensation. People of Northern European descent and those aged 30 to 50 years are at increased risk for DH. It is also associated with certain HLA genes, this time HLA-DQ2 or DQ8. These HLA genes are thought to play a role in forming an autoimmune response to gliadin proteins. Therefore, celiac disease is strongly associated with dermatitis herpetiformis. Question time! Which HLA subtypes are associated with PV, BP, and DH? PV, or pemphigus vulgaris, is associated with HLA subtypes DR4 and DR14. BP, bullous pemphigoid, is associated with HLA subtype DQB1. And DH, dermatitis herpetiformis, is associated with HLA subtypes DQ2 and DQ8. So now remember, it has been found that more than 90% of patients with dermatitis herpetiformis have some variation of a gluten allergy, the cause of celiac disease. Gliadin is a peptide contained in gluten and is released when gluten is broken down in our digestive tract. Following the ingestion of gluten, gliadin is deaminated by the enzyme tissue transglutaminase, or TTG, in the intestinal lumen. Deaminated gliadin then binds to HLA-DQ2 or DQ8 molecules, which recruit and activate helper T cells. These T cells induce inflammatory damage to the intestinal lining, thereby exposing endogenous tissue transglutaminase antigens to B cells. Activated B cells produce IgA antibodies against the exposed TTG antigens, and these antibodies also react against epidermal transglutaminase. When these antibodies form complexes with epidermal transglutaminase, they deposit within the dermal papillae and cause immune damage, leading to inflammation and blistering. So, under the microscope, you will see neutrophilic microabscesses within the dermal papilla. Let's pause to check your knowledge. Question: which layers of epidermis are affected in PV, BP, and DH? Answer: in PV, the stratum spinosum is affected. In BP, the stratum basalis and basement membrane. And in DH, the dermal papilla. Dermatitis herpetiformis diagnosis is confirmed with the biopsy of the perilesional skin. So a biopsy would occur in an area like the elbow with characteristic excoriated papules, erosions, and crusts. Histopathology reveals infiltration of neutrophils with incipient formation of papillary microabscesses and dermal-epidermal separation, which look like Ferris wheels of cells and an underlying open space where the layers have separated. Direct immunofluorescence of perilesional skin shows granular deposits of IgA at the basement membrane. Confirmatory testing with serology can show circulating IgA antibodies with either ELISA or indirect immunofluorescence. Total IgA levels must be documented because IgA deficiency may coexist, giving false negative results. So how do we treat DH? The first-line treatment is the same as for celiac disease, a gluten-free diet. Remission can be achieved by gluten-free diet alone, but this takes time, like months to years. Dapsone is used to induce rapid remission in days. Topical steroids with or without oral antihistamines may be used for symptomatic management of pruritus. DH is a chronic disease with multiple relapses and remissions. Relapses can be triggered by resumption of gluten or discontinuation of dapsone. DH is not associated with an increased mortality rate compared with the general population. And that's it for bullous skin disorders. Let's check your knowledge and see what we've learned today. First, can you describe the skin lesions of pemphigus vulgaris? PV presents with mucosal and skin lesions that are characterized by flaccid blisters on an erythematous base with a positive Nikolsky sign. Next, can you name the autoantibodies responsible for causing pemphigus vulgaris? PV is mediated by IgG autoantibodies against desmoglein 1 and 3 in the stratum spinosum layer of epidermis. Now, what is the clinical presentation and classic skin findings for bullous pemphigoid? BP has a prodermal urticarial phase that progresses to tense pruritic blisters on an erythematous base. And which autoantibodies are responsible for BP? BP is mediated by autoantibodies attacking hemidesmosomal proteins. Now, can you describe the skin lesions of dermatitis herpetiformis? DH is characterized by multiple grouped severe pruritic papules and vesicles on the skin. And what is the cause of DH? DH is thought to be due to gluten allergy and cross-reactivity of autoantibodies to TTG. And lastly, can you differentiate the first-line treatments for pemphigus vulgaris, bullous pemphigoid, and dermatitis herpetiformis? PV is treated with systemic steroids and local skin care. BP is treated with topical steroids, and DH is treated with a gluten-free diet. And we're done. Armed with your newfound knowledge, let's think back to the patient from earlier in this episode. Your patient, Artie, is a 57-year-old man with easily popping blisters on his torso and in his mouth. You remember this pattern and suspect a diagnosis of... pemphigus vulgaris. A quick internet search yields an image of a classic lesion, and both Artie and his wife immediately recognize the blisters as identical to his. You explained that PV is an autoimmune skin disease where the top layer of the skin doesn't hold together well, leading to thin-walled, easily popping blisters. You advise confirmatory blood tests, a skin biopsy, and dermatology referral, but you start him on empiric systemic corticosteroids. Although Artie is reluctant at first, you tell him that quick control of the disease and skincare precautions to reduce infection are crucial to getting control of a disease that can be fatal. Artie is shaken by this presumptive diagnosis, but glad he listened to his wife and came in to see you. And that's our show. If you liked this episode, send us a comment or give us a thumbs up. Until next time.